This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on the 9th of October 2015 on Monocle 24. Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Gillian DeBias. Today I'm joined by film critic Tara Judah, who's going to run me through the first few days of this year's London Film Festival and some of the films that have created a bit of a buzz. We'll shine our spotlight on Taxi Tehran, a portrait of the Iranian capital told through passengers in a taxi. The Lobster, which is the latest surreal offering from Greek director Yorgos Lanthimos. And finally, a documentary all about British comedian Russell Brand, entitled Brand, The Second Coming. That's all to come right here on the Monocle Arts Review. Stay tuned. Welcome to the show, Tara. Now, the London Film Festival kicked off this week with 240 films on offer from over 72 countries. Now, there's so many film festivals around the world these days. What sets the London Film Festival apart?
So the London Film Festival is really a fantastic opportunity to catch up on some of those titles that have come at the, you know, bigger bombastic film festivals like Cannes, Berlin. We've been hearing about them for months. They're finally here on screens that are really accessible to the public. There's tons of screenings going on at venues all around the city. It's not one of those festivals where it's just happening in one place. I think LFF has really grown a lot in recent years. It used to be very much just at the BFI and one or two other venues, and now we're just seeing it pretty much everywhere across the city.
It's great when a city encompasses a film festival like that, and it throws up certain themes. I understand one of the themes is more of a focus on women. How does that follow through the festival?
Yeah, there's a big focus on women. I think that a lot of this comes from the fact that the BFI themselves are, you know, heavily involved in releasing things like the suffragette films. There's a whole season called The Time Is Now, which is kicking off all across the country, which starts with the suffragette film, but also looks back at other archive works. There's a kind of selection of early archive films about the suffragette movement in Sheffield and up north, and those archive films haven't really been seen on big screens. So this sort of re-release of a lot of older movements, but I think, you know, it's very timely. Feminism has been taking a big bash recently, so it's time to kind of drudge up some of those older issues and say, look, here's where some of it started, here's where the movements were, and a very accessible film that Suffragette is with such, you know, big name Hollywood actresses like Meryl Streep and Carey Mulligan.
Exactly. Well, we're going to take a look now at the first film you've highlighted. It's called Taxi Tehran. Now, this is a documentary-like film that portrays the Iranian capital through the people who get into a taxi, driven by the director, Jafar Panahi. Now, the taxi is always a good capsule for storytelling. Can you give us a sense of this film?
Absolutely. The taxi is fantastic. It operates like a sense of consciousness. You know, this really reminds us of films like Taxi Driver, where you get this sort of idea that something is moving through the city, moving through these spaces, and getting a really close look at the types of people who very transiently move in and out of the vehicle. The POV at the beginning is sort of like taxi cam POV. So we're looking out onto the street. But very quickly, one of the passengers that Panahi picks up moves the camera and turns it 180 degrees on itself so that suddenly we're looking at the interior of the car. And we really get these amazing bite-sized conversations. It's all played very much for laughs. It's a very knowing film that it plays with these ideas about surveillance and social realism. It is very much a film that looks like a documentary, but obviously is heavily scripted at the same time. So you get a real sense of what Panahi is saying about the difficulty of making films in Tehran as well. You know, the idea that surveillance is always there, that there's a sense that you're looking for something authentic. And I think this film is really trying to get at what's the truth and what's the difficulty of filmmaking and how can you kind of break through that and show something honest about this place.
Well, let's have a listen to the film. This is a clip of Tehran Taxi.
You're a man.
the sounds of passengers in Tehran Taxi. Now, tell us a little bit about the director himself and the conditions under which he had to make this film.
So he's had a very difficult time with filmmaking. A couple of films ago, he made a film called This Is Not a Film. This was when there was a ban placed on him in Iran. Essentially, his political filmmaking has always brought out issues of gender and social injustice. And so he was incarcerated or not incarcerated, but I guess under house arrest in a way, and had to make films sort of through coveted ways of getting them out there. He then made a film called Closed Curtain. These films have found their way to film festivals over the years. So he's obviously got ways of working within the system. But what Taxi Tehran really does is I think that it's the one that shows this is really how hard it is. And it's a comedy in a way that he sort of is suggesting, look, I've had difficulties, but I will always find a way to make a film. There's a beautiful sequence where he picks up this young girl who's playing his niece, and he goes to collect her from school, and she's really upset because he's late, and she can't show off to all of her friends that Jaffa Panahi's picking her up. And then she starts telling him about this project she has to make for school. They have to make a film, but they're not allowed to make it too real because it won't be distributable. So we get this whole conversation in the car about what makes a distributable film, what are the difficulties of filmmaking within this regime.
Well, interesting, because of course it won the prize at the Berlin Film Festival. The director wasn't able to pick up the prize. What was the reaction in Tehran, and will people in Tehran ever be able to see this film?
I think definitely. I think there's always a way to get this stuff out there. In fact, there's a scene in the film that really plays with that idea of how do people in Tehran get access to a lot of these banned films. And one of those ways is that there's a man that he picks up who, you know, is selling pirated movies. And so it's this idea that even if it's not formally allowed, that people will always find a way to get the message out there. They'll always get the art through. They'll always find ways of disseminating it. You know, there might be official restrictions on you, but if you're passionate and if you have something really important to say, there's always a way to get that message across.
Sounds interesting. Well, Taxi Tehran debuted at the Berlin Film Festival earlier this year and has continued to tour the International Film Festival circuit. It will hit cinemas in the UK, Norway, Sweden and Finland this autumn. Now, let's move on to the Greek director Yorgos Yathimos' latest film, The Lobster. This surreal comedy imagines a dystopian future where single people are told they must find a romantic partner within 45 days. Otherwise, they'll be turned into animals and sent off to the woods. Now, Tara, Lanthimos is known for his rather bizarre films. How eccentric is this one?
It's every bit as eccentric as you would expect. I think for anyone who's seen Dogtooth, which was very much a film about gated communities or the idea of a kind of family that's closed off to the rest of the world and the idea of not going out there into the rest of the world, he's made something now that is really about those sort of social structures that exist outside. And it's a very heavy satire. It's absolutely hilarious. Very high level of comedy going on in this film, but also a really biting satire. That has something to say about the sort of heteronormative structures in society and what it is about, you know, the idea of having to find love and how many rules we place on the way in which we endeavor to have relationships with other people. There is this idea that the city is somewhere where you must have people living together in, you know, very heteronormative relationships. If they fail, they go to the hotel. They have a period of time where they can try to find a mate. If they don't, they'll either be turned into an animal of their choosing, or they can run off and become a loner. But even the loners have a strict rule set by which they live. So, you know, that once you've decided to be a loner, you then can't decide to go into any kind of monogamous relationship.
Well, let's hear a clip from the film now. This is some of the male characters discussing what animals they might be if they stay single.
Have you thought about what animals you want to be if you don't make it?
A lobster.
I'm going to be a parrot if I don't make it. Why don't you become parrots too? And then we'll all be together.
You're a complete idiot. Picking one of the few animals that can talk when you have a speech impediment. You'll lisp even as an animal. As for you, they'll catch you and put you in a pot of boiling water until you die. And then they'll crack open your claws with a tool, like pliers, and they'll suck out what little flesh you have with their mouths. You're pathetic, both of you. I'm not going to be turned into some animal. I'll come and visit you, though, with my partner, when we're walking together in some park or when we're swimming in the sea.
And that was an excerpt from the film The Lobster. Now, what is quite extraordinary for such a maybe offbeat, eccentric film is the casting. Tell us a little bit about the cast.
It's an incredible cast. In the lead roles, we have Colin Farrell, Rachel Weisz, John C. Reilly, Ben Whishaw, Olivia Colman in what I think is the best performance in the film altogether. She's just sensational. It's been a real joy, actually, to see Olivia Colman move from things like Peep Show and TV into film. Tyrannosaur was just mind-blowing, and this role's really no different. The cast is quite surprising, I think, because it is a little bit of an offbeat comedy for some of those actors, particularly people like John C. Reilly, who you expect to see in much more mainstream cinema. But they all rise to the roles with aplomb. It's absolutely the best performance I've seen from many of those actors. It's great to see Rachel Weisz back in a big screen, really big film, because I think she's kind of fallen away over the years. We haven't seen a lot from her, and she really is a brilliant actress. Fantastic performances all round.
And visually, it's quite stylized. What is the feel and the look and the mood of the film?
It has a break with mood, actually. So the first set of a film is really set in the hotel, and that is incredibly controlled environment. Everybody is wearing the same clothing. Everything is muted. The colours are really kind of dark and bluish and greyish in tinge. We have a very controlled environment up until the second sort of section of the film where things move into the woods. And then it's a little bit more earthly and organic. We get this real sense that there's a struggle, though, to find something that is really organic and earthly in the film. People constantly trying to break out of these structures, but very much the stylistic setup of the film mirrors the fact that they're unable to ever break out of those structures.
Intriguing film. Watch out for The Lobster in cinemas later on this month across Europe and Australia. Finally, Tara, we have a documentary about Russell Brand called Brand, A Second Coming. Now, this follows the British comedian's journey from growing up in Essex to his dalliance in Hollywood and finally his current attempt at being an activist for social and economic good. Now, Brand is one of those people people either love or hate. After this documentary, will people love him more or hate him more?
I think if you already have a position on Brand, you're probably going to stick to it. But what this documentary does do, and it's worth saying the film is somewhat sympathetic to, you know, his stardom and his kind of issues of ego. But at the same time, what the film does do is it tries to give a trajectory. So how did he start off as a young boy in Essex? What were the familial circumstances that led to him moving into the kind of life and the drug addiction that he had, his search for stardom, his constant search for something. And this idea really is, you know, very much a kind of Lacanian idea about the concept that humans always lack something. So he's always searching. And in a way, it's a very good critique of capitalism in the sense that, you know, He filled that at one point with drugs, and then he filled it at one point with booze and, you know, with sex work and all these kinds of things that he was sort of drawn to. It became stardom. And then once he was famous, it was sort of like, how much more famous can you become? He sees himself as a Jesus Christ-like figure in the sense that he thinks his comedy is something that can rouse the sort of minds of the public. And in a sense, he's not wrong. His ability to get a following is significant. He's really gone, you know, whether or not you like him, from one strength to another and one influential standing to another.
Well, let's sample the film now. This is a clip from Brand, A Second Coming.
Oh my God, I'm living like this life.
The very thing that I detest. Vapid, vacuous celebrity.
Fame, power, money is bullshit.
I don't want to give all this up.
Argument occurring.
This is stupid.
After 14 months of marriage, Brand filed for divorce.
I've got to live a different life now.
Russell came into my bedroom and he said that he was the second Jesus.
Jesus wasn't that funny.
He might have been. Maybe it got less funny as he was indoctrinated. What I want is
a spiritual revolution and a complete global change of thinking.
To a degree, mine can.
Not the best example.
An excerpt from the documentary Brand, A Second Coming. Now, often when people make documentaries, it's very hard to find real footage. There must be a wealth of archive footage for this filmmaker.
Yeah, I don't think it was difficult to put the package together. But what's interesting about the trajectory of the film is that it actually started off as a film about happiness in 2009. And Albert Maysles worked on this film. And it was going to be, that was the concept, The Search of Happiness. And then it sort of changed over time, and the focus became, I guess, Brand's ego and the direction of that. Now, a lot of that's got to do with the fact that he's written the book Revolution. There's explosive material come out of his chat with Jeremy Paxman, and then the sort of the truths that he started up, this online TV show that takes the news apart and picks apart things like Fox News. There's so much footage of Brand and so much to draw on. I think that the filmmaker really did have a really great selection, but she's picked very carefully and I think very successfully. It's cut very well. It shows you both his you know, his sort of pitfalls and also what there is to like about him and why he's so charismatic, whether or not you do or don't like him, that there is something there that just is really hard to ignore.
Well, Brand, A Second Coming is out today in the US cinemas and will be out in the UK on October 23rd. The London Film Festival runs until October the 18th and there's plenty to go and see. Tara, finally, what are you looking forward to next week?
I'm really looking forward to seeing Guy Maddin's The Forbidden Room, which is playing in IMAX, which I think will be absolutely incredible. Films like The Assassin, which played in Cannes, I'm really looking forward to seeing. There's a documentary that was banned in one part of Australia called Gaby Baby, which I'm also really looking forward to. So much on the schedule.
Lots to choose for. Well, that does bring us to the end of today's show. Tara, Judah, thanks very much for joining us in studio. You've been listening to The Monocle Arts Review with me, Gillian DeBias. My producer was Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time on Monday for our art review. But for now, thanks very much for listening. Goodbye.